Well, the scrutiny of National's tax plan is forcing the party to dig in with its assurances that it's credible. It comes as the governing Labor Party, tax and trade experts dispute the legitimacy of some elements, especially that foreign buyers tax. Now, National's finance spokesperson Nicola Willis yesterday told TVNZ Q&A that it sought advice about whether the foreign buyers tax would breach New Zealand tax treaties after it released the policy last week. Now, with more analysis on the party's tax plans, we're joined by Eric Crampton, chief economist with conservative think tank, the New Zealand Initiative. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
Okay, let's just start with the logistics here and whether this tax plan is doable. Robin Oliver's advice, who is a very serious tax expert, does seem to suggest it is possible to navigate a way through as long as people are non-residents.
Yeah, and Robin Oliver knows a heck of a lot more about the international tax treaties than I do. There have been some other experts that have suggested that there could be some problems with it, but that would be one more for the lawyers to sort out. But even if there is a way through it that sticks to the letter of the tax treaty, that doesn't seem very consistent with the principles of them, that you're not supposed to treat foreign nationals in discriminatory fashion if they are protected by one of those tax treaties. So looking for loopholes through that isn't a particularly good look for a small trading country that depends on rules-based international orders.
Do you think that it would create diplomatic problems, challenges, and that we might face repercussions?
Depends what the letters of those treaties are. It's more that New Zealand has had an excellent reputation internationally as good trade partners, not the type who would be looking for little niggly loopholes to get around the spirit of agreements. Getting away from that principle wouldn't be very good.
To be fair to National, and this was the point Nicola Willis was making yesterday, in a sense it's actually a liberalisation of the rules, isn't it? Yes, it's
exactly
putting a tax in, but it does mean that previously foreigners couldn't buy property. They can at least buy them over 2 million. So that's actually a liberalisation of the policy. Is that really going to upset other countries?
Well, it depends whether they would take it as a sort of precedent around other aspects of tax treaties, right? But you are right. It's the liberalisation. Effectively, now we have an infinity tax on foreign buyers that there is no price that they can pay because we banned them. There's not good justification for it. It came out of somewhat racist 2017 election campaign that everyone was worried about foreign buyers stealing all of the houses. Once they started tallying the numbers, it was a fairly trivial part of overall demand for housing and wasn't really contributing to housing shortages here. The thing that contributes to housing shortages is a lack of houses and an inability to get them built because of zoning and consenting and building material supply regulations and all of the bits that we've canvassed many times before, right? So if you get that working right, then the number of foreign buyers coming into the market doesn't matter for housing any more than it matters for the market for used cars
okay.
or anything else.
So that's the sort of the mechanics of it. In terms of the revenue, in your view, are these heroic assumptions about how much can be earned here?
Well, Castalia has run the numbers on it. More closely, they have the background workings. Well, a couple of bits did surprise me, though. So the story that they've got on the revenues that they would get from the foreign buyers tax is that there's a lot of pent-up demand. And that doesn't seem crazy, right? So the government puts in a ban on foreign buyers, and it sets an extension of the bright line rule on housing to 10 years. That means that on the demand side, there might be foreign buyers who have been wanting for years to get in and haven't been able to. And on the supply side, people who would have wanted to have gotten rid of a vacation home or a second house, but are going to be stuck under a pretty bad tax treatment with the extension of the bright line rule. If National were to bring that back to 2 years, you've got the inability for foreign buyers to come in again where they'd been frustrated previously and an ability for people to sell at the same time. So that could all work out, except you'd expect that in the revenue projections, you'd have a big hump at the start wherein all that pent-up demand flows through and then declining over time. Instead, we have a slow increase in revenues over time. So that was a little bit odd. The biggest problem, though, in the overall numbers is that they're looking for tax savings through these kinds of mechanisms, mainly because they've got a very small reduction in overall spending. So if we look back to 2019, the Labor government had then projected for 2023, this year, that core crown expenditures were going to be 28.8% of GDP. So that would be about $14.5 billion less than the government is spending this year. National is proposing spending cuts of about $1.5 billion. In the context of core Crown expenditures that are $14.5 billion more than had been forecast for 2023 by a Labour government. So if you're unwilling to get back to levels of spending consistent with even what a Labour government wanted in 2019 for this year, then you're not going to have much room to do things like properly inflation adjust the tax thresholds. They've got a very minor adjustment to the tax thresholds. If you run the numbers on it, it accounts for inflation that happened from 2010 when they last set the tax thresholds to 2017 when they left government.
Okay, Eric, so what you're saying, and look, you're a conservative think tank, aren't you? You're a free market economist. You're arguing that it should be much smaller government here, and that, in fact, they don't need the. If they did that, they wouldn't need these tax increases.
Are you saying that Labor was conservative in 2019? Because that's what you're telling me, right? I'm saying Labor's numbers in 2019 had more than $14 billion less spending than we are spending this year. And yeah, you can make allowance for the cyclone. That's about $1 billion. COVID's run its course. Is it a conservative cutting thing to say that government should be no bigger than...
But isn't the economy like, you know, it's 10% bigger, the economy? And since 20...
This is percent of GDP, though.
Okay.
So if you take the nominal GDP for 2023, multiply it by 28.8%, what Labour had said we were going to have as core Crown expenditures, you get a number that is $14.5 billion smaller than what they were forecasting to spend for this
year. So your criticism here is really, when the tax revenue measures are a side issue, your main criticism is that they are simply not delivering or promising the level of cuts to the size of government that you believe they should be for a conservative party.
I'm saying that they're having trouble getting the numbers for inflation adjustments to the tax thresholds, which are absolutely necessary. We've had 13 years of fiscal drag, right? They've had to make room for that by doing things like pull the ETS revenues into main balance sheet, which is better than spending it on industrial subsidies. That's great. It'd be better to have a proper carbon dividend. I'm not sure that I'd call what they're doing a climate dividend. They're having to look at somewhat implausible measures around gambling tax. So they're figuring that offshore online casinos will register with the New Zealand government, pay GST, which gets kind of complicated when you're thinking about gambling because it's more like a financial service. They'd also pay company tax here, which is a bit of a mess because they're already paying company tax in their home jurisdiction, and you wouldn't want New Zealand companies to be subject to company tax when they're just exporting somewhere.
So that you said implausible. You don't think the gambling tax revenue's plausible?
I think that they're going to struggle to get compliance in that. They say that they will have some kind of geo-ring fencing where they'll block websites for offshore gambling outfits, but that could have pretty pernicious effects. If you try that, you're going to have an easy time banning the reputable ones that have a stable IP address. Everybody knows who they are. You'd have a harder time playing cat and mouse with ones that are a little more disreputable.
Eric, we're going to have to leave it there. But listen, thank you very much for your analysis. Appreciate that. That is Eric Crampton, Chief Economist with the conservative think tank, the New Zealand Initiative.